Welcome to Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered. Yes, I'm back, and I have the first episode in a series, Dismantling Big Pharma and the Medical Industrial Complex. And, you know, those of my more loyal viewers, the ones who were here through the COVID years, have long known my skepticism toward the medical industrial complex and Big Pharma, one of the, I would say, most corrupt industries in the country, if not the most corrupt. In the year 2020 and the subsequent years that followed, we saw what happened to doctors when they went against the government narrative. You don't think Americans should get the jab? You're a quack. You believe in a treatment plan the government doesn't approve of? Your medical privileges are suspended. You don't think masks work? Based on, like, you know, all reputable studies, license revoked. You're a purveyor of disinformation. You're dangerous. In fact, in seemingly a humiliation ritual, some of these doctors were required to undergo a psychological evaluation in order to continue practicing medicine. Yes. Because you'd have to be crazy in order to go against the government narrative, right? Well, as I said at the time, and I have been saying since then, if you think this kind of corruption and manipulation started during COVID, you'd be wrong. If you thought this was the first vaccine that has major safety and efficacy issues, you would also be wrong. If you thought that this was the first time a doctor has had their livelihood ruined for going against the government medical narrative, you'd be very wrong. Someone who knows this all too well is a man by the name of Dr. Andrew Wakefield. The name likely sounds familiar to you because you heard him smeared by the mainstream media as a disgraced, discredited doctor after he dared speak out about the MMR vaccine. But the truth is, I will tell you, far different than the media actually let on. You're surprised, right? You're surprised. The media didn't tell me the whole story? Well, Dr. Wakefield was a well-published surgeon from the UK with a specific interest in IBD and gastroenterology, with around 140 scientific publications on the matter within the span of a decade. The course of his career changed after he began hearing from parents complaining that their children began developing gastrointestinal problems after taking the MMR vaccine. Today, you're going to hear from Dr. Wakefield in his own words, not only what the media got wrong about him all those years ago, but about the new bombshell he has uncovered with respect to the MMR vaccine and Big Pharma corruption. I would like to welcome to the program Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Thank you for being here, sir.
Sarah, thank you very much for having me on.
It's the honor is all mine, doctor. So I want to, trust me, I want to get into the bombshell that you are about to uncover with your new movie. But I want to talk to you first about all of the myths that were perpetuated by the media about who you are and how you became Big Pharma's number one enemy, seemingly, so to speak. The repeated mantra since, what was it, 1998 is, Dr. Andrew Wakefield said that vaccines cause autism. But that isn't really what you said, is it?
No, Sarah, please call me Andy. On one level, I suppose you could look at this as how to take a relatively promising medical career and flush it down the toilet, and a lesson, therefore, to medical students and young doctors now. Or you could look at it as what happens when you confront government policy and you threaten pharmaceutical industry profiteering. And that's really where the story begins. Mm-hmm. I was very, very naive. This was, I'd go back 30 years now that I've been involved in this. And as you say, I was a surgeon. I was a GI surgeon. I loved doing research. We published a great deal about Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. And then in 1995, I started getting calls from parents saying my child was perfectly well. They had speech and language interaction with their siblings. They were developing normally, healthy. And then they had an MMR vaccine. Then they had a seizure and they were never the same again. The lights went out. And they were ultimately diagnosed with autism. I said, I'm terribly sorry. You must have got the wrong number. I know nothing about autism.
Yeah.
It was so rare when I was at medical school, we weren't even taught about it. 1 in 10,000, 2 in 10,000 children. And so they said, no, the reason I'm calling you is my child has intractable bowel problems, diarrhea, failure to thrive. I know they're in pain. They've lost the ability to speak, but as their mother, I know my child is in pain. But the doctors and nurses I talk to dismiss this. They say this is just autism. Get used to it. Put them in a home. Forget about them. Move on. Have another child. I mean, this is appalling. And yet the story that they told was so consistent and so coherent. These are very smart people. And they had no other reason. They weren't anti-vaccine. They'd follow the doctor's orders. They'd taken their child to get vaccinated. And so there was clearly something going on. And so I put together a big team of eminent doctors. The world's leading pediatric gastroenterologist at the time, Professor John Walker Smith, and we investigated these children, and the parents were absolutely right, as is the case inevitably. Mm-hmm. The parents knew their children better than the doctors. The parents were right. The children had an inflammatory bowel disease. And when we treated that bowel disease, as we might treat Crohn's disease or colitis with anti-inflammatories, then not only did the bowel symptoms get better, but they started speaking again. It's rather like that Lorenzo's oil story, you know, that they started using words, language that they had stopped using 5 years ago. It was fascinating. This was a real, and we thought that didn't happen.
Right.
So we did it again. We did it 183 times before I left the Royal Free Hospital, and it happened virtually every single time. So when the parents were right about that, the medical profession was wrong on virtually every count. There's no regression. The diet doesn't work. This isn't autism. We know about it, my dear boy. You don't, sort of thing. All this, the medical nonsense that would go on, and yet there it was in front of our eyes. We could see what was happening to these children time and time again. When they said, my child regressed in the face of a vaccine, we had to take that extremely seriously. Mm-hmm. Not to buy into it, to believe it or not believe it, but to investigate it to the best of our ability. The parents had entrusted their children to our care, and that was our duty.
Yeah,
that's not how medicine works.
Yeah, so you were following the facts where they lead. And of course, this is, I'm just trying to summarize what I believe that you said. So tell me if I'm wrong. But I recall you saying, we need to look more into this. We've seen all of these, look at all of these children who are coming in with the exact same symptoms, the exact same stories from the parents. As you point out, the parents know better than the doctors. We're listening to all of these. We're seeing it with our very own eyes. We're documenting it. We should probably take the single vaccines, the measles vaccine, the mumps vaccine, the rubella vaccine, separately for now until we can study this more. And I want to play, actually, a video from you saying just that, which it later became completely misinterpreted. But here is Andy on the MMR vaccine being split up.
I do think that there is a case for dissociating these vaccines into their component parts, separate measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines, given perhaps by separation of 1 year.
Now, if you were an anti-vaxxer at that time, you would be doing a really terrible job of being an anti-vaxxer because you didn't tell people not to get a vaccine. In fact, you told them to get three different ones instead of one.
I was terrible. in propaganda, I would be absolutely useless. What we did is we wrote up a case series, you know, the first 12 children, and people say, well, that doesn't mean anything. When this is how human disease syndromes are first described. Listen. Mm-hmm. You listen to the patient or the parent in this case, and then you look at your investigation findings, and then you write them up. And you say, you can draw no conclusions. You can't make definitive statements. All you can do is say, this is a case series, and based upon this, we recommend the following more detailed study. What we'd noticed is that there had been no cases in our whole series with the single vaccine. The single vaccines, it had all come when they'd put the MMR together. Mm-hmm. It didn't make it the cause.
Right.
But it seemed to be that the common denominator was the MMR vaccine. Now, at that time, in both the US and the UK, the single vaccines were available. Otherwise, I would never have made that recommendation.
Right.
But what happened is the British government went on to remove the importation license for the MMR, for the single vaccines, because I had made this suggestion, okay? So they had deprived parents of a way of vaccinating.
Yeah.
They wanted to protect from measles. If they did that, why would they remove an opportunity? Right. And I asked the head of vaccination in the UK this very question. I said, why would you do this? Why would you remove this option from parents? And they said, because if we allowed parents the choice, it would destroy our MMR program. In other words, her concerns were for the protection of the program, mm-hmm. not protection of the children. What happened in Merck, in the US, is that Merck unilaterally withdrew the single vaccines and said, our way or the highway. It's MMR or nothing. Mm. So these two systems removed the option that parents had. They only had MMR. And whether it's causal or not, we've seen an escalation of the numbers of children with autism now way beyond what was anticipated. One in now in California, one in 22 children have autism. This is a staggering disease load. Mm-hmm. Any economy to carry, it can't carry. You can't do it. You're going to end up in a situation where you either have autism or you care for someone with autism. And,
right.
And that's the way, you can't function as a society like that.
Oh, no. I mean, I hate to call it a drain on the economy, but I mean, it absolutely is. The resources we don't have to be able to care for that many people who have autism, who are going to need care mm-hmm. up until and through adulthood. I agree with you. So I want to ask you, they stripped you of your medical license, right? They tried to destroy you. And here you are. 30 years later, not just still talking about what you've uncovered, but you just keep uncovering more and more and more. Did you ever think that this would be your life? Like, was what they did to you the driving factor in, you know what? There must be something here. Because if I could say what I just said, which is a completely benign, responsible thing to say as a doctor, if I can say that and have them take my livelihood, there must be something much bigger that they're hiding.
Yes, I don't. I, at the time, two things happened.
Yeah.
In succession. And one was that the dean of the medical school, Larry Zuckerman, who is heavily funded by the pharmaceutical industry, took me aside one day and said, if you continue this work, this vaccine safety research, it will not be good for your career. And that made me angry.
Yeah.
It made me determined to work twice as hard. I mean, he was absolutely right. It wasn't good for my career.
Right. We found that out later. Spoiler alert.
I thought, you come to a crossroads, and the crossroads is this. Do I work for the pharmaceutical industry, or do I work for that child sitting across the desk from me whose life's been destroyed? Mm-hmm. I still don't know whether vaccines cause autism at that stage, mm-hmm. but I know that this has to be investigated. Otherwise, and that's a simple choice.
Right.
The consequences are far-reaching, clearly. But it's a simple choice to make. I'm not going to turn my back on that child and the mother and just say, okay, there's the door. Would you take your damaged child and leave and don't come back and bother me again? It's just not going to happen. That doesn't make me brave or clever. It just means I'm trying to do my job as a physician. The second thing that happened was very significant. And that kind of concludes the current status of our knowledge about MMR vaccine and autism. Is that back in the days when I was still talking to the CDC, the FDA and others, we had a meeting at Cold Spring Harbor. And at that meeting, they said, okay, look, every kid gets MMR, only a few get autism, so why the difference? Well, we know in medicine that that's the way. A lot of people smoke, some people develop lung cancer, some people don't. That's the way medicine operates. We don't understand the reasons for it fully, but that's the way it is. So I said, look, my group is interested in patterns of exposure. Not just that you get it or you don't get it, it's that you get it at a certain age. Or you get it when you've got another bug infecting you, or you get it when you've got, you get three vaccines at once compared with one vaccine. Our interest is in age of exposure. One of our principal interests is that because we know with measles, the younger you get it, if you get it under one, chances of a bad outcome are much worse than if you get it over one. Now, intuitively, that may be due to the maturation of the immune system. It's able to deal with the virus better. Does the same pertain to MMR? We're testing the hypothesis that younger age of exposure to MMR incurs a greater risk. Mm-hmm. So MMR isn't one exposure. It depends on when you get it. And the CDC, to their credit, went away. They did a study in the metropolitan Atlanta area testing exactly that hypothesis, and they showed that it was exactly true. Kids who got vaccine between 12 and 18 months were at much higher risk than those who got it after 3 years of age. What did they do? Did they tell the public? Did they warn the public? Did they say we need to do a bigger and better study? Did they say to parents, delay the vaccine until after three because this is what we found? Until we do more work, this is our recommendation? No. What they did is to destroy the documents, destroy the data, and corrupt the data that they did have and publish something that said MMR is safe. They didn't know any of this. 12 years. Until William Thompson, a whistleblower, came forward, said, I can no longer live with this anymore. I was the senior author on that study, the senior scientist. I collected the data. I analyzed the data. We have done a terrible thing. And here it is. And we made the movie Vax, which told that story. So where we stand now is not only we have compelling evidence that MMR vaccine is causally associated with autism, and age of exposure is a major determinant of that, that they deliberately put millions of American children, and by proxy children around the world, in harm's way from a permanent, catastrophic neurological disease in order to protect themselves and their program and the CDC and destroy these children. It was a deliberate thing. And had there been one word of a lie in Vax, we would have been sued to the moon and back. It wasn't a whisper. Not a whisper, because they knew it was true. That is appalling. And to me, that motivates me more than anything, is that people have been deceived, they've been lied to, their children have been damaged. This whole thing carries on today as though nothing had ever happened.
Andy, when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the kind of the current state of medicine, where we're at. And then I want to get into the bombshells of the latest movie that you have coming out. Boy, Big Pharma must really not like you. First, we want to thank our sponsor before we go to break, Preborn. So as we sit here today, the lives of babies still in the womb actually are hanging in the balance. So if you guys have not heard about the amazing ministry of Preborn, I want to tell you about it. So what Preborn does, they make it very easy to partner with, okay, because their ministry empowers young expectant mothers in crisis to choose life. So these women, they're scared. They're often told, you can't do this by yourself. You don't have the money. They're scared. And they're told by the left, it's just a clump of cells. Don't worry. You will have no regrets afterwards. Don't worry about it. Just go get an abortion. But when they walk into a Preborn clinic, what Preborn does is they show them the truth. They show these women ultrasound. They show them the baby inside of them, and they let them hear the heartbeat. And when a woman considering abortion visits a Preborn center and hears her baby's heartbeat, that makes her almost double likely to actually choose life. So it's $28 to sponsor an ultrasound. The cost of one ultrasound is $28. How many babies' lives can you save? Okay, you can donate securely over at preborn.com/Sarah. We're working to save the babies, guys, all right? So any donation helps. $28 could be the difference between life and death of a baby. It's preborn.com/Sarah. So Andy, you know, knowing what happened to you and how you were kind of, you know, if there's ever anything to be an OG for, it's probably not fun to be the OG for like having your medical license stripped from you. But you are the OG of it, unfortunately. And when you're watching these doctors during COVID, you know, you're watching doctors like Peter McCullough and Ryan Cole and some of these other doctors who are actually speaking out against what they believe to be wrong, right? You're watching this and are you just like, boy, if you guys even knew the half of it?
I'm very, very proud of them for standing up.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, literally 30, 25 years ago, there was, and I say this not as a sort of feel sorry for Andy Wakefield,
right.
It's just a story that sort of characterizes the history of this, is that this was all very new. Cancel culture, the industry did not have a plan for how to deal with dissent from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And so when this happened, it was one person, and then there was the British government, the Department of Health, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American government, the pharmaceutical companies globally, the World Health Organization, UNICEF. It was was an interesting disparity in the, and so I didn't really stand a chance in that battle. But no, you keep going. You can either roll over and quit, or you can say, no, I don't have a problem.
Right.
That kid has a problem.
Right.
He has no voice, so somebody's got to do this. And I don't mean to be sound heroic or sanctimonious, and that's just that's what I signed up to do. And so, but I'm very, very proud now to see that people, even people like Peter McCullough, the most published cardiologist in the world, the best cardiologist in the world, is not immune to the attack from the pharmaceutical industry, the government coming down on his university. How powerful are they to be able to do that? Who just destroyed now hundreds of careers. But the great thing is that there are strength in numbers. These people are coming together and they're refusing to be defeated. They're going to not only survive this, they're going to thrive in this environment. And they're now, in a very short space of time, being shown to be absolutely right in everything they've said.
Yeah.
So it has, I've seen a huge change in the whole sort of landscape of this issue from being unrespectable to being, to being avant-garde, to being, this is what we believe and we're going to stand by it from hell or high water. And I love that. And I'm very, very pleased to say that I know these people and that they are my friends.
You say how powerful must these or these, you know, industries, I guess, be to be able to ruin someone's life. And I agree with you. How did they get to be so powerful?
What happened? The key event for the, let's talk about vaccine manufacturers in particular, because they have a very, very interesting example, is that up until 1986, they were not indemnified for damage done by their vaccines. And the old whole cell pertussis vaccine was causing a lot of brain injury in children. And they knew this. And they said to the government, the American government, either you indemnify us from injury for this vaccine that you're recommending for children, or we will stop making it, children will die, and it'll be your fault. How do you feel about that? And the government was coerced into indemnifying them. They had no liability for death or injury caused by their vaccines on the recommended schedule. And that then led to a dramatic expansion of the vaccine program. They had no liability. All they could do was make a profit. Had no downside. They had a mandatory market. Kids had to get these vaccines to go to school. So all they could do was make a profit. And then when they did that, they became very rich, and they used that money to buy the media, to buy medical schools, medical training. They bought politicians. They bought lobbyists. They owned everything. And I, you know, I remember going on CBS with Cheryl Atkinson when she was still there. And we did a segment on this, and she said, Andy, when this goes for editing, within 15 minutes, in 15 minutes, we will hear from the money men on the top floor saying, we can't play the segment, it's pulled because of our sponsors. She was wrong. It was 5 minutes. 5 minutes it took for them to say, pull this segment. It's not going to play. That's what's happened to the news media. That's what's happened to the medical training, medical students. Yeah. It's what's happened to medicine in general. And that's tragic. It's absolutely tragic. However, I do believe that COVID vaccine, the lies they told, their multiple misdemeanors in the entire thing has been their biggest mistake. Because, as I say, when I started, there were a handful of people worldwide who were prepared to talk about this issue. Now it's more than half the adult population of the world are refusing to take the booster doses of the vaccine. In other words, by definition of the CDC or the media, these are anti-vaxxers.
Right.
Joined our side. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And you've done it because you've made this in your arrogance. Your stupidity, your greed, you've made this terrible blunder, and now people realize who you are.
I think that people also realize how quickly they will turn on you if you just say, like, for instance, there were a lot of people who said, well, I just had COVID. I don't really want to get the vaccine. Like, there could be someone who's completely up to date with all of their other vaccines, but they're like, I just had COVID. I don't really feel like I need to get the vaccine. And they were called an anti-vaxxer. And I think that it made a lot of people go, oh, so they'll just call you that on a dime if you question anything, or even if you just reject it and say, no, thanks, I'm good.
I don't think this is the danger when you treat the American people as stupid.
Right.
When you treat them as, oh, they'll just follow along. Let's operate a sort of system of mind control here and see how many people we can bend to our will. And people haven't done that. People have resisted and resisted and resisted and doing it more and more and more. And they're just saying no. Biggest mistake they ever made.
Yeah. So I want to take a break. And then when we come back, I want to talk about your new movie and what you've uncovered. I know we talked about, you just mentioned your movie Vaxxed, which I highly recommend everyone go watch. It is, as Andy said, this, don't take it from us. Take it from the whistleblower who was there at the CDC who watched all of this take place. So make sure that you check that out as well. But I want to talk about, I'd say, Andy, they screwed with the wrong person because they did this to you. And now you just keep coming after them and you keep uncovering all of these things that they thought that they were going to keep a secret. So I want to talk to you about that. And I want to bring in someone who, of course, stars in this movie as well. You may see a familiar face coming in here in a second. First, we want to actually thank our sponsor, Jace Medical. So Jace Medical is there for those of you who, we've got drug and medical shortages all across the board in the United States. And if you guys thought, you know, what happened with COVID, it turns out most of your medicine that you get is made in China, which, by the way, is not a good idea. Okay. But be that as it may, when things shut down in China, you don't get your medication, as it turns out. And I'm not a big fan of medication, but if you've got something like you've got a kid that has strep throat, or you've got someone in your family who just takes a daily medication that they would greatly suffer if they didn't have it, that's what Jace Medical is for. So they've got a Jace case, okay, and you can personalize it, but it's like they've got 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. And all you have to do to get your Jace case is fill out a simple form online. You're going to have it there ready in case you need it. They've got dozens of add-on options as well. They've even got ivermectin as an add-on, so you can customize it for your family's needs. By the way, if you've got grown children who have families of their own, get them a gift card as well so they can personalize theirs. You can go to jasemedical.com. Use promo code Sarah for a discount. That is jasemedical.com, promo code Sarah.
He was an orphan of conflict in Africa. He was smart and bright, and then we got him home and he crashed right in front of us.
Some very important people are saying our vaccine does not work.
You're gonna wanna read this.
They faked the data. They cheated on every level.
You said you're a lawyer.
Family law.
And you wanna understand why?
Let me see it. What about Ishal?
Your son and every other son and daughter depends on whether or not you choose to live by their rules.
Incineration. Immediately.
What did they get? Like nothing is what they got.
Were you aware of the lab's failure to demonstrate efficacy of the mumps vaccine, a level required by the FDA?
No, to respond to the FDA's concern.
And leave a dangerous vaccine on the market.
Dangerous?
Objection.
Strongly recommended booster shots.
Of course you did.
This is a confidential document.
These were shredded.
It's a protocol.
They've got the sheets. They've got the evidence I was told they didn't have.
No one will ever believe them again.
That was the trailer for Protocol 7, a new film coming soon by Andy Wakefield. And you may have seen a familiar face in that trailer. We have joining us Matthew Marsden, of course, Blaze TV contributor, and I always call you actor and producer extraordinaire. Well, there you were.
It's my day job, right?
Yeah. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, no, it's my absolute pleasure.
Matt, so I want to talk to you guys about Protocol 7. I realize it's the name of the film, okay? Mm-hmm. But what is Protocol 7?
Protocol 7 is a protocol used by Merck to enhance the attempt to enhance the sensitivity of their mumps assay to show that the vaccine works when they know, in fact, it doesn't. Mm. So it is a way of misrepresenting the results, which they ultimately give to the FDA, that shows their vaccine or seeks to show that their vaccine is doing something that they say on the product insert it's doing, but in reality is not doing.
Right. So this was, and I want to make it clear for everyone, this is a feature film. It's a theatrical, it's script, but it is based off of an actual court case that is, I believe, is still ongoing. Is that right?
That's right. So what happened is over the years, because of the position I'd taken, people would come to me from federal agencies or from drug companies and say, we've done a terrible thing. Here's the evidence. And this is one such case. And I became aware of this case 20 years ago.
Wow.
And it has been, you're right, it's been in federal court in eastern Pennsylvania for a very, very long time. And it seemed to be churning over and going nowhere, and Merck trying to stop it. And the people who are actually being injured by this process, who are being harmed, but had no idea of it, were, of course, the public, the children and, of course, their parents who had taken them along for vaccination. And so it was high time this story got told.
Yeah, because when I look at just being a vaccine skeptic for many years, I would look at these stories of all of these mumps outbreaks. And there's another mumps outbreak in, you know, a college dorm where everyone was vaccinated. And I'm like, well, that seems weird. Because if all of these people are vaccinated, why are they still getting the mumps? Isn't that the point of the vaccine if it works? And so I kept seeing all of these different headlines seemingly all the time saying that there were these mumps outbreaks. And so was that part of this court case that's going on right now?
The court case was about the protective ability of the vaccine and less about safety. But these two issues are really important. I'm glad you bring that up because... Yeah. Here you have teenagers getting mumps when they've been fully vaccinated, 2-3 doses.
Right.
How can that possibly be? And mumps, as you know, in children is a trivial disease.
Yeah.
When it was first introduced to the CDC, a potential mumps vaccine, they said we don't need it.
Right.
This is a mild disease in children. For commercial reasons, it was pushed and it became a mandatory vaccine. But the point of it is that mumps in children is trivial. Mumps in post-pubertal boys is not trivial. Most people, girls, is not trivial. It can produce testicular or ovarian inflammation and sterility. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing, if a vaccine does not work, it makes you susceptible to mumps again when you're older. It's turned mumps into a dangerous disease. Mm-hmm. The vaccine has made mumps a more dangerous disease, and that appears to be what's happened here. So yes, people are being damaged by this, and it's a population who may never realize that it was failure of the mumps vaccine that led to their inability to have children later in life, because there's such a gap in between.
Right.
That's why this issue, one of the many reasons this issue needs to be so clearly highlighted.
I mean, we're talking about fraud of epic proportions. Think about how many Americans have been lied to and potentially damaged because Merck has fraudulently represented their vaccine as something that it isn't. And by the way, again, this is according to court documents. This is not Sarah Gonzalez saying it. This is not Andy Wakefield saying it. This is not Matt Marsden saying it. This is all represented in actual court documents and from whistleblowers.
Yeah, and you see one of the principal expert on behalf of the whistleblowers is the ex-head of the FDA, Kessler. Mm-hmm. He's coming out and saying all of the things you've pointed out.
Wow.
This is fraud. They've done this wrong. They've done this wrong. They've misrepresented this. They've lied here. They've deceived. So it's not my opinion. This is the opinion of the top guy at the FDA at the time.
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that if ever a good thing could have come out of COVID, it's that people are more receptive to movies like this, that they will listen to other people's stories. I mean, as you know, I ended up on the sticky end of nowhere near the cancelling that Andy got, but I certainly had that when I came out against the COVID vaccine. And I think that, again, it was just using logic. I was never an anti-vaxxer. You know, I think like many people, I was like, okay, whatever, like the vaccines are fine. I'm, you know, I'll go and get my shots, whatever. I didn't really look into it. You know, I didn't have any cause to. And I think that the veil was lifted, certainly when it came to the kids, when under COVID, they were like, well, you know, kids don't have any symptoms. They don't necessarily transmit it or get infected by it. You certainly can't see it. But they should be vaccinated. You're like, that is insane. If you can get your immune system up, which is what we've been doing for a millennia,
right.
get the disease, get the natural immunity and move forward. And when, for me, when I was ridiculed for saying that, and like, look, I exactly the same. I got COVID. I was actually open to taking the COVID vaccine and I got COVID. And afterwards I was like, yeah, you know what? I'll just wait. Boom, like this vicious attack, like you're anti-science, yeah. You know, you're this, you're an anti-vax. I was like, I just said I'm going to wait, you know, and like we've done forever. Yeah. But then I became the antichrist and an idiot and you're not a doctor and you're blah, blah, blah. And the same thing when you look at the masks, which are literally to stop liquids going, you know, contaminants going into wounds, that they do not stop. You know, we can look at the microbial size of the diseases. They do nothing, which we all know that now that they know that they did nothing. The 6 feet was a crock of shit. Now that was just made up by some moron who said, oh, 6 feet space. Like, how many times, I'm going to ask you guys, how many times did you go to a restaurant, they tell you to keep your mask on, walk across to your table, sit down, take your mask off? And everyone's like, no, you've got to do it. I'm like, you guys are a bunch of idiots.
That's super science. What are you talking about?
Total science. And I need to be a doctor. But I played a doctor. I've played a doctor twice now, so no one knows. But the point is, it's just all so ridiculous. Yeah. And it's red-pilled people. People are like, okay, hang on a second. What else have they been lying about? And Andy, and I'm so proud to know him and I call him my friend, that he was the first one, like you said, he stood up alone. He was alone doing this. And, you know, people should just go into the movie just for that, because he's an incredible human being. And he stood up when nobody else was doing it, really. Nobody else was doing it. As you say, the OG canceled. Yeah. They came after him before they were going after anybody else. And he's still here. And so when that happened to me, I looked, I was like, this guy's been getting the crap kicked out of him for 30 years. And he's still coming back. Like, we have no excuse not to stand up and be counted.
Yeah, I know. I agree. So I want to, I know we have to take a break. So here's what I want to do. We're going to take a break. And then when we come back, I want to talk about, you know, you mentioned, what, do you not believe in science? Let's talk about some of the super science-y things that Merck did in all of their, you know, super science-y procedures that they did in order to give them the outcome that they wanted with regard to the MMR vaccine. We'll do that after the break. First, we want to thank our sponsor, Relief Factor. So those of you who are living in constant pain, there's millions of you out there. I know, millions of Americans. You live in constant pain. You think that that's the way it is. You're just constantly going through life like, well, I'm a little less patient with my kids and my spouse because I just have that nagging pain all the time. That doesn't have to be your life. Try Relief Factor. It was developed by good doctors, not the bad ones. Okay. But it is all natural. So it's not going to make you feel loopy or jittery or anything like that. It's just a very, very strong anti-inflammatory, because it turns out you get rid of the inflammation in your body. Oftentimes that is the root cause of your pain. And so Relief Factor has this 3-week quick start pack. Okay, they've got a guarantee with it. It's $19.95. 70% of the people who order that 3-week quick start go on to keep ordering more. That's how many people it's working for. So the odds are in your favor that you can get out of pain. And if you can, it can be life-changing. They've got a guarantee, like I said. So you're out nothing. Okay, you're out nothing except potentially your pain. You can go to relieffactor.com, get that 3-week quick start over at relieffactor.com. So in Protocol 7, the movie, I'm going to ask both of you, because you, Andy, are a doctor, you play one. Okay. So you both get to have an opinion on this. Okay. Within this case, this whistleblower story, this case that is coming out against Merck, I mentioned super science-y. Okay, does this sound super science-y to you? Selectively changing raw data to get rid of test results that did not give Merck the outcome that they needed. Altering or destroying raw data on counting sheets and using, you know, an Excel spreadsheet that automatically identifies unfavorable counts to them so that they could expedite their cheating. Does that sound very scientific to you?
Well, of course, absolutely not. Absolutely not. The whole thing was corrupted from the very outset. And what's interesting about this case is that it's been going on for a very long time. The screenplay was written in 2012 with the help of my friend Terry Rossio, who Breck, Pirates of the Caribbean, Kong versus, you know, Godzilla versus whatever.
Yeah.
It goes on and on, Aladdin. We had a wonderful time writing it, and then we sat on it because we're waiting for the court case to play out. Now, the story was written on a limited number of documents that were available to us at the time. Mm-hmm. Now there are millions of documents that are being unsealed, and we've got to read those. We've got to make sure that this doesn't pull the rug from under our story. What's fascinating about that is that when we do that, we find that the actual fraud, the actual misdemeanors that they committed, far, far greater than we'd characterized in the film. It's much worse. In other words, are Merck going to come after us for making this movie? I doubt it, because they've been trying to keep all of these documents under seal for a very long time. Now it turns out that what they actually did seems to be a great deal worse than we've characterized in the story. So that's going to be an interesting one to see how that plays out. But they did. The fraud took place on many, many levels, because when they did one thing and it failed, they had to move on to another thing that failed. And then in the end, as you point out, they just simply had to cross out numbers and change them. And that's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. I mean, if I'd done it, I would have had my license withdrawn many years before. I would have been called a fraud mm-hmm. by Fox News many years before. And yet they seem to be able to get away with it. They've all moved on to other jobs, and you know, there's got to be accountability, and that's why this film is so important. There is no accountability. It's business as usual, and that cannot be allowed to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you have these doctors who have just kind of taken over the medical industrial complex, as I like to call it, and whatever they determine to be science is now science. And if they can't get to that particular outcome by way of actual science, they'll just figure it out. And then once they do, they'll say, this is the science, and that's it. I mean, it's just been hijacked by a bunch of people who already have their pre-existing notion of, this is the outcome that I want to get to. How will I get there, even if I have to lie, cheat, and steal?
Yeah, I think that, again, going back to what happened throughout COVID, the irony of someone saying, well, you're not a doctor, what does that mean anymore?
Right.
I think that in years gone by, we would, you know, rightly so, you know, if you wanted to have something signed, you go to a judge or you go to a doctor. They have standing in the culture. And what I found during that period, which obviously led me on to my red pill moment about vaccines, was that there was this kind of like slavish devotion to what a doctor said, and you must not question it at any point. And then you realize, well, hang on a second. And this is the way that I approach everything, is like, there's good and bad in everyone. There's good and bad in every single profession. Mm-hmm. Doctors are not immune
right.
to criticism. They're not immune to the things that affect everybody else. You know, certainly like as an actor, you want to be liked, you want to be appreciated. And doctors, they're not some kind of like mythical beast that are above all these things. And we've kind of treated them like that. And so when you have certainly someone like Andy who turned around and said, hang on a second, I want to question this. It used to be, you know, okay, we'll have the marketplace of ideas and we'll figure this out, mm-hmm. right? You bring your science, I'll bring what I found, and we'll figure this out. And that's the way it's been done all throughout history. And I think that what happened with Andy was, maybe it was before that, but it certainly was the catalyst for, listen, you are not allowed to question. I don't care what your credentials are. And that's the funny thing. People would say, you know, you saw this through COVID, right? You're not a scientist. Well, yeah, well, this guy says that and he's an expert in his field, you know, like Malone. Oh, no, not that kind of right. scientist. You're like, are you serious? Right. Like, are we just going to keep going until we get to the person that agrees with me? Which is what they're doing, that it's like headhunting a doctor to tell you what you want to hear.
Right.
And that's absolutely not objectivity.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why movies like this are so important. This is why the medium is so important, because Andy could be on 1,000 shows, right? 1,000 shows, he could do 1,000 articles. There's nothing quite like having a movie out there that is forever. It can be replayed forever. The story can be retold over and over again. And if people have a problem with what they're seeing in the culture, and what they're seeing with what happened. I don't understand how people aren't beside themselves over what just happened over the past 4 years. Go out and buy the film. Go out and watch the film. Go out and send it to other people and raise awareness, because a lot of people for the longest time thought they were alone and they didn't have the gumption to stand up against the Borg.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Andy, give everyone just a little bit of a teaser here on, you know, some of the explosive things that you have in this movie. What did Merck do when, and again, this is documented, okay? What did Merck do when they couldn't get the result that they needed with the PRN assay?
I'm going to spoil the movie now. And I,
well, you don't have to all the way if you don't want to, but did they toy with it a little bit?
They did.
Added some... Added a little bit of things in there.
Added the secret sauce.
Yeah.
And the problem with the secret sauce is that they wanted to improve the sensitivity of the assay, its ability to detect a positive result, the result they wanted.
Right.
What they in fact did was to mess with the specificity of the assay, giving them a completely meaningless, nonsensical result. So the secret sauce will remain until the movie mm-hmm. breaks. But yeah, this was one of the many levels that they operated on. The other thing about the movie, I just want to say, Sarah, because to me as a director, and this was the most fun part,
yeah.
is that the other main element of the movie was about the power of a mother's intuition. So here we have this sort of small town lawyer, Alexis Kaprowski, this woman who's in family law, and she adopts a child who catastrophically regresses into autism. And from that point forward, everything is conflict. Drama should be about conflict. And everything in this woman's life is about conflict. Conflict with her husband, conflict with the child's doctor, conflict even with Matthew as the doctor who brings the whistleblower forward, conflict with the courts, conflict with everybody. And she has to rise above all that. She has to trust in her innate instinct as a mother to do what is best for her child and by proxy, every child in the world.
Yeah.
And that is one of the guiding lights in my medical career has been to listen to mothers, because invariably because they know their child so well, innately, for reasons that we can't even put into words.
Right.
These two were once connected. They were once one and they will never be separated.
Yeah.
They just know when their child's well or when they're ill, what's troubling them. And so she prevails. And that for me is, she prevails against the pharmaceutical industry.
Yes, yes. All right, hold that thought. Let's take a quick break and we're going to be right back. Protocol7.movie. Make sure that you sign up so that you can be updated whenever the movie releases, and you're not going to want to miss it. It is explosive. It's going to make your blood boil, but it is information that you need to know. Dr. Andrew Wakefield, thank you so much for being here.
Sarah, thank you so much.
Stream and subscribe to more Blaze Media content at theblaze.com/podcasts.